What's up, guys? This is Jacques, and welcome back to Politically Incorrect. I have a bit of a jumbo episode this week because my interview with my special guest just ran for a really long time. So let's just get into a few things because I know you want me to talk about Bling Empire. I promised on Twitter and last episode that we would talk about it. But first, I just need to address some stuff about my last episode. You can go back and listen to it if you haven't already so you know what the hell I'm talking about. So my last episode has been going nuts over the last few days because Kelly Dodd, of all people, shared it on social media. I was surprised because I definitely criticized her a little in the episode. You know, I did hold her accountable for certain things. So either she didn't listen to it before she shared it, or she did listen to it and she just could see that my criticism was coming from a fair place, as opposed to other people who kind of attack her with, you know, some bias or a bit of an agenda. So look, the feedback to that episode has been so overwhelmingly positive, and I'm really happy about it. I have had everybody from the Trump supporters to like the wokest BLM Bravo accounts in my inbox saying that they loved it and they understood exactly where I was coming from. And it was such a relief to me because I was expecting to get a lot of hate. You know, I spend a lot of time on Twitter where people are just awful, and I'm so used to being taken out of context or misunderstood. And I had braced myself for the worst, and it's been the actual complete opposite. So I don't know, you've restored my faith in humanity a little bit. The only backlash I've had is from a few accounts, like maybe about three, and they hadn't even listened to the episode at all. They had just assumed that I jumped on the mic and started blindly defending Kelly Dodd when the episode, if you've heard it, isn't really even about Kelly Dodd. And you know, it's strange because these haters are a bit scary because they're arguing a point that they're completely misinformed on. Like, how can you hate a podcast that you literally didn't even listen to? And if anything, seeing that reaction from a few bad apples kind of proved the point that I made in the episode, which was about how, like, we need to do our research a little more and kind of, like, know what we're talking about before we start attacking people online. So, you know, it is what it is. Speaking of me being right, the morning after my episode dropped, Charlotte, aka Samantha, I guess I can use her real name now because she tried it with me on Twitter a few hours ago, she showed up in a Vice article pretending that she had been doxxed and playing the victim. Did I not tell you that that was exactly what was going to happen? Like, this is basically my prediction to a T. And Sarah Galley was in the article too. I almost died. Like, how does good old Sarah Galley somehow insert herself into every Bravo-related drama? I really cannot with her, but she entertains me. I don't know why. I just find her so tragic. It's funny. And guys, didn't I warn you like 10 episodes ago that these people just use cancel culture to promote themselves? It's a scam. We're seeing it now. I think a lot of you are seeing it too, judging by the messages in my inbox. So I'm glad. Anyway, the Vice article was terrible. It was basically a press release for Sam and Sarah. It was so badly researched, you know, it was totally biased. And then, you know, people wonder why nobody trusts the media anymore. Hello? And you know what? I could do a whole other segment on that Vice article alone, but I kind of just want to move on from this mess. I said what I had to say, and I know it probably seems like I love being in drama. I really don't. You know, my inbox has been blowing up with receipts and stories from people about their experience with Samantha, and it's not very positive. And, you know, I appreciate everybody's support and their interest, but at the same time, like, I do not want to be dragged into drama between fan accounts on social media. I wouldn't have even called Samantha out if it was just about her stealing content and memes and stuff. I just felt like I had to speak up about her doxing that woman, and I felt like it spoke to a larger point about how a lot of people conduct themselves online these days. But now I've said it, I'm over it. I don't really expect to talk about her anymore moving forward. Unless she tries to come for me, then it'll be gloves off. You know, she did try on Twitter earlier, but I shut it down. So it is what it is. And Sarah Galley, girl, do your thing. Get that promo. Also, I just want to say a lot of you left me some really amazing, glowing 5-star reviews over the last couple of days. I read them all. Thank you so much. If you haven't left me a review, please do so on Apple Podcasts or on Podchaser if you don't use an iPhone, because a few haters are leaving me 1-star reviews now. I read one of them and it was literally from somebody who, again, hadn't even listened to the episode and was just enraged about Kelly Dodd. So if you can please drop me a 5-star review to offset some of the hate from people trying to torpedo my show now. I mean, like, fair enough if you want to give me a 1-star review, but just like do it fairly. Just be like, oh, I listened to his podcast and I don't like it. You know, don't leave me a 1-star review when you haven't even listened to my show like some of these other people are doing. Anyway, moving on, let's get into the show. So I know you're all loving the new Netflix reality show Bling Empire, and guys, I think we need to have an intervention because this is not okay with me. This is not a good show. This is actually one of the worst reality shows I've seen in a long time. I should add that I hate a lot of Netflix reality shows in general. Love is Blind is a masterpiece. I love that, but that's it. Selling Sunset is just such a shallow snoozer, and Too Hot to Handle was atrocious. And I say that as somebody who loves almost all island-based dating shows, and I just could not deal with Too Hot to Handle. So the premise of Bling Empire is a bunch of super wealthy Asian Americans in Los Angeles, and I mean, that's it. There's nothing else to it. There isn't really a storyline, and most of them don't even seem to be friends. If you look at the cast members, most of them actually have backgrounds in TV and entertainment and production and everything. So it's basically just a bunch of loosely connected people who have been trying to get famous for years and they've been thrown together, which, to be fair, is most reality shows, but they really try to sell this as a group of friends, and it's clearly not. To try and give the show a bit of a coherent narrative, because it has none, they center it around this hot male model named Kevin. He's the best looking guy on the show, and he's actually one of the few cast members with a likable personality. He clearly didn't know anybody. I think he met, there's this gay guy on the show, I think his name's Kane. He has these really full on big cheek fillers. I think they might have met once at a party or something. So they cast this guy, Kevin. He doesn't really know anyone. They pretend that he's really poor and that he's been thrown into this rich friend group. So a lot of the show is just like contrived fish out of water stuff. It'll be like Kevin reacting to people spending a lot of money, like, oh my God, you know, you spend that much on shoes. That's my whole rent. Like stuff like that over and over. The only other entertaining person on this show is this rich old lady named Anna. I actually thought she was white at first, and I thought she just had a lot of plastic surgery that made her look Asian, kind of like Jocelyn Wildenstein, but no, she's the real deal. She's hilarious, she has good shade, she has good one-liners, but she's also about like 60 years old and she would never hang out with these people. It's a little bit like on Southern Charm how they try to find excuses for Patricia to be involved, because Patricia's like the most entertaining one on that show. They do that with this Anna. So they try to manufacture a feud at the start of the season between Anna and this other rich lady named Christina. I didn't even really understand it. It's like, who's the richest queen bee of the group or something? There didn't really even seem to be anything to it. It was like production were kind of trying to like put a feud together with like out of context confessionals and stuff. I think someone was offended over like a piece of jewelry. It was fake. Was stupid. The whole show is really badly produced. Like, characters come in and out at random. So, like, you'll be introduced to somebody at one point and their story, and then they just, like, disappear for 3 episodes. You can tell that production just gathered as many rich Asians as they could find and just sort of, like, started filming them and kind of threw together what they had. Like, there's this one girl named Jamie, and she's extremely wealthy. I think she comes from a billionaire family, but she has no personality, and she just shows up in scenes completely overstyled. It's like, she'll show up in, like, a cut-and-paste look from a designer lookbook, and she always looks so awkward and overdressed. It's like the clothes are wearing her, and then she doesn't do anything. She just hovers around, but because she's rich, they're like, oh, well, she's rich and she's Asian. Let's just chuck her in. Barely any of the storylines on the show connect to a larger narrative. Like, everyone's kind of just doing their own thing, and they have very separate things going on that have nothing to do with each other. And then occasionally there'll be a group scene to try and act like it's a group of friends when we know that it isn't. They also shoehorn Kevin into almost every scene because he's the main character and he's the narrator. So, you know, I saw him with certain people on the show and I'm like, he doesn't even know this person. Like, he's just there to kind of narrate the show. The only real drama came from this one girl, Kim Lee. She's a Vietnamese American. She hosts some MTV show. So she's been in the spotlight and she knows how American reality TV works. So she kind of tries to make drama, like, she's bitchy and she sort of throws a drink on someone. It's like, okay, whatever, girl. It's really boring. I would say about 70% of it is staged. Outside of Anna, nobody has good shade. Like, they're not witty or funny characters. And, you know, I'm actually worried about this new trend in reality TV where viewers are willing to accept anything as long as the characters are wealthy. Like, watching somebody strut around with a giant Chanel plastered in gigantic letters on their sweater isn't entertaining. Like, being rich doesn't mean you have a personality. And I didn't even enjoy the opulence of Bling Empire because most of the fashion and wealth was so tacky and ostentatious. Like, Kevin, who was the poor one, he actually had the best style out of anybody. And at least on Selling Sunset, like, Selling Sunset is the same sort of premise where it's like nothing happens, but they're just rich. But at least the architecture of the homes is beautiful and it's interesting to look at. On Bling Empire, it's like someone shows up with bedazzled blue sneakers with a big Dior logo on it. It's just like, oh, it's like if, I think I've said this analogy before about Dorit maybe, but it's like a hillbilly won the lottery and just decked themselves out in designer clothes. Just, ugh. For real, somebody with a bit of taste and an eye for fashion could probably whip up some better outfits from clothes from Target, because these people really don't have style. It's just money, which is, you know, very different. The best way I can sum this whole show up is, like, imagine a reality show where every single character is Dorit and Dana Wilkie. Like, that's Bling Empire. But on the bright side, not to be a completely negative Nancy, there is actually another Asian-fronted reality show out right now that I love. It's called House of Ho. It is on HBO Max in America and streaming on Stan if you're in Australia. House of Ho is like the anti-Bling Empire. First of all, it's actually real.
I like attention.
Now let's get fucked up and make some money.
It's hard being a first generation Vietnamese in America. You're kind of sandwiched in between the past and the present.
My parents care about how we are perceived. I announced my divorce during a family brunch. It was hard for me. It made everyone around the table tear up. Letting it all out there, good and bad, it's huge.
I wasn't ready for everyone to see everything about our family. It came out anyway.
To reveal the toughest parts of our marriage with the cameras on, that was hard.
We got into a little argument.
Leslie, you gotta be a little hoe to deal with that hoe.
I'm not an actress. I'm just living my real life. So I'm still the same Judy.
It's everything that we felt, everything that we're going through. Maybe our story can help somebody else.
Everyone's gonna see how real this is to us.
It's been an amazing ride.
So it follows a wealthy Vietnamese-American family who live in Houston, Texas. They have the classic immigrant story of coming to America, working their asses off, becoming rich and successful, like living the American dream. They're very patriotic, so even though there's a lot of Vietnamese cultural aspects to the show, there's also a lot of Americana. Like, all of the children and grandchildren are named after American presidents. The main son on the show, he's called Washington. And this is kind of a strange analogy, but House of Ho reminds me a lot of Everybody Loves Raymond. I mean, obviously it's not a sitcom, but just in the way that the entire show is centered around this one family and the spouses, and they all live right next to each other, and really all of the drama is interpersonal drama between family members. So the main storyline is kind of really around the oldest daughter, Judy. She has just got divorced and she's figuring out life. And then there's her brother, Washington, who is this spoiled, obnoxious, narcissistic brat. He's a total party animal. And they want him to take over the family business, but he's not mature enough, even though he's like pushing 40. And then he has like marriage issues because he has this nice wife, Leslie. She didn't grow up rich and she kind of married into the family. And not only is she dealing with Washington, who is a hot mess, but she also has to deal with his parents, specifically his mother-in-law. And that relationship is a bit like Deborah and Marie in Everybody Loves Raymond. Like, you know, the daughter-in-law can never impress the mother-in-law type of thing. And they also have this wacky aunt named Aunt Tina. She's sort of there for comedic effect, but she is so funny. Oh my God. She reminds me of like a Mad TV sketch of a sassy Vietnamese woman, except she's all real. It is just such a fascinating show on so many levels. There's like family dynamics and those relationships. There's the marriage stuff. There's the cultural aspect to it with, you know, their Vietnamese background. And Bling Empire had zero culture. So for all the sort of diversity championing that everyone's doing about Bling Empire, you could have actually had an all-white cast on Bling Empire and it would have been the exact same show. There wouldn't have been a difference. Like, the Vietnamese culture and immigrant story plays a huge part in House of Ho. And Funnily enough, my housemate is actually a Vietnamese background and he has a lot of family in America, specifically in Texas. And we watched House of Ho together and he was vouching for so many specific details in the show. He's like, that's accurate, that's accurate. My family does this. Oh, my family's exactly like that. So obviously it's very authentic. So the show is a bit of a slow burn, but I find it so intriguing, so refreshing because it isn't fake, but it still looks beautiful. Like it is shot kind of like The Hills or Selling Sunset or something. So you do have the glam production values, but you don't have the stagey scenes and the fake drama. However, as much as I love it, I'm not going to give it a hard recommend to all of you because I think a lot of you might actually find it boring. Like I will warn you that it's almost like a documentary than a reality show. It does not have any of the trashy reality show drama. And so many of you have actually gone and watched Below Deck and Temptation Island since I've been plugging it and screaming at you all to watch them. And I've had really positive feedback on that. Everyone's like, oh my God, thank you for getting me into Below Deck. Thank you for getting me into Temptation Island. And I don't want to ruin my flawless track record by making you watch House of Ho and then getting messages like, House of Ho was boring and then you're not going to like respect any of my other recommendations. So I would just say, from what I've said about the show, if it sounds like something you might be interested in, if you want something that's a little different, that's a little bit more serious, a little bit less produced, give it a try. And I'm actually interested to see what you all think about it. So if you enjoy it, hit me up on Instagram at popinkpod. And if I get enough of you saying that you like House of Ho, I'll actually try and get someone from the show on my podcast to interview because I'm just so fascinated by it. I think I might get Cousin Sammy. She seems like she would be a good interview and she probably has a lot of tea. So yep. All right, so let's get into my interview with Blair White. If you don't know who she is, she's a transgender YouTube star. To be honest, this interview could not have come at a worse time because I was so excited to drop this. And now that I'm in this controversy regarding Samantha, aka Charlotte, I'm just like, oh, her little minions are going to hear this and they're going to see Blair White on the podcast. And now everything controversial that Blair White has done is going to be like put on me probably like, ah. Look at him giving Blair White a platform, but I don't care. Blair was a lot of fun. I definitely wanted to interview her as soon as I made the podcast because I thought she would be a great guest. I will warn you all, I don't know how everyone will take the interview because you are obviously used to me interviewing a lot of reality stars like, you know, the Housewives and everything. And this Blair White interview is a bit different. We covered a lot of stuff. We actually, to be fair, got into the weeds a little bit with very specific political YouTube drama stuff. And Blair spilled a lot of like scalding hot tea. I mean, she actually exposed people who are huge names in the kind of conservative political YouTube scene with like millions of followers. She dropped some receipts on them. It's like a pretty big deal, but if you don't know who they are, you might be like, who the fuck are they talking about? I tried my best in the interview to kind of explain who everyone was and to give context, but look, if you don't follow all of the political people on YouTube, I'm kind of obsessed with all of them on the right, on the left, and, you know, they all feud with each other. It's kind of like watching reality TV with these people. So I'm all into it. I don't know how everyone's going to take it, but we talked about other stuff. Like we talked about some of the more mainstream YouTube people like, you know, Shane Dawson, Jeffree Star, Trisha Paytas. A lot of you will know who they are. Blair shared some stuff about her being transgender, just her journey. We talked about like gender things, you know, like all the non-binary stuff. Should children be allowed to transition? We talked about reality TVs because Blair is actually a Housewives fan and she's into some other shows. We talked about everything. It's a very long interview. It's like an hour and I actually edited like 20 minutes down out of it and I couldn't get any more because there was just too much good stuff in there. So I don't know. I think there's something in there for everyone. I think everyone will find different parts of the interview very interesting. And I think if you're actually a fan of Blair's and you know who she is, you will love this interview because it is quite thorough and we talk about so many different topics. So that's your little warning for that. I hope you all enjoy it. And yeah, thank you. Hey guys, I have a great guest this week. She was on my wish list of guests when I started the podcast. She's definitely the most controversial woman on YouTube for sure. It is Blair White. Hey.
Hi, how are you? What an intro.
I know. You know, I had Shellyn Lester on a few weeks ago, and I called her the most controversial woman on YouTube, but I think you're... I think you won up. I think you're the number one biggest scandal on there.
Love it.
I've got so much that I want to ask you, but for people who don't follow YouTube stars and might not be familiar with your story, I just want to get some background first. So you are infamous for being politically conservative and transgender, which isn't super common. I've been watching you from just the early days of when you first started. And I think what's really good with your content is I don't think that you have to be conservative to watch your content. Like, I feel like you have quite a diverse fan base from like everywhere.
Yeah. You know, what's interesting is I have over the years become known for that attribute of who I am, which is why, you know, my political views or whatever. But I've always approached social media as a way to show like every facet of who I am, or at least most. I mean, there's certain things in my real life I don't put online, but, you know, so that's why I feel like you said, you don't have to be a Republican or whatever to watch my stuff, just because, you know, I also do like, you know, lifestyle stuff on Instagram, and I'll make like videos. I do like a predator hunting series on my channel, or I'll do like videos about my transition. Like, I don't stick to one thing. So even though a lot of people like to latch onto and call me like a Republican influencer or whatever, I'm really not. It's like, there's a lot of other things I am.
So how old were you when you first started identifying as female?
I would say 19. And then at 20, I started my transition.
So that's when you started on hormones and everything officially?
Yeah, but 19 was kind of when I was like, these are some weird feelings that I've been feeling my entire life that I've been suppressing. Maybe I should do something about it. And then a year later, I kind of took the plunge.
Had you come out before that as just like a gay male during your teen years?
You know, it's interesting. I never really came out as gay. That is like a common story with a lot of trans women, is like, you know, you're a trans woman, and then, you know, earlier in life, they sometimes say like, I was a gay boy or whatever. And I guess for all intents and purposes, I was, but I never had this moment where I would like tell like my friends or family, like, I'm gay, because that never really fit. And I never didn't quite know why it didn't fit at the time. Now I know why, because, you know, my true identity is being transgender. But so I didn't have that moment. And I never quite fit in with the gay community either. Like, I remember wondering why, like, men in that community weren't attracted to me, because I was always very feminine and, like, naturally, like, just like that. And then I also would question, like, if I technically am, like, a gay male, like, why am I not attracted to other gay males? It was always very confusing. So yeah, I guess I technically was, but I never really lived that life, if that makes sense.
It is a weird kind of like thing to try and fit into. I feel like there's like one type of like gay person they expect you to be. And then if you're not that, yeah, it's like, you don't fit in.
It's the same with being trans. I mean, earlier you mentioned that it's like more so rare to hold like the beliefs I do and be trans, but I actually am of the opinion that it's not. I think just people are very quiet in the trans community, because it is a very small community. It's very insular. And oftentimes we're in that community. This isn't the case for me, but for a lot of trans people in the community, you know, they latch onto that community because maybe their families have abandoned them, or their friends from their past life have abandoned them. So they don't want to rock the boat with being maybe more so different than the peers that they now have found, this newfound community. So so they stick with that. But I meet LGBT people like just constantly who will come up and say that they agree with all of that. So, you know, it's an interesting world. Like, I've never quite fit in with the LGBT community, but I like partying with them sometimes, maybe on the weekends. When it's not Corona.
Yeah, well, I mean, they know how to party, that's for sure. How did your family take it when you came out as transgender?
My mom's side of the family was great. My mom accepted it and vowed to like help me and help get through it, help me pay for it. She didn't end up helping pay for it, but I'm still waiting on that check, Mom. But I'm a self-funded transition. But my dad's side of the family took it not so great. I don't talk to any of them. They've definitely disowned me on the sole basis of being trans. So I feel like I've gotten like both sides of the spectrum. It's an interesting dichotomy where it's like I have this one side and I totally experience like the full loving, accepting narrative of being trans. And then I also experience the full like, get out of our lives, we disown you. So I think I can see both sides of that.
When you came out as transgender, was that before Caitlyn Jenner or was that after? Because I feel like when Caitlyn Jenner did the Vanity Fair thing, it totally put transgender on the map, which before it wasn't talked about that much.
Yeah, she definitely came out before me. That was in 2015 or 2014. And then I think mine was like late 2015. But I remember watching like her reality show, because she had a reality show based around her being trans and her trans friends, which at the time was like pretty groundbreaking. You know, there's nothing like that ever on television. And I'd watch every episode. And I remember it was before I really took the plunge on my own transition, thinking like, this is really cool to see this on a reality television show. So she definitely put the stamp on it and made it more of a public conversation.
I liked the scene in her show where she was having the political argument and she was trashing Hillary Clinton. They were arguing in the bus. That's so fucking funny.
It was iconic. And no one that was the moment where people turned on Caitlyn.
I know.
Like, that was the moment where everyone was like, wait, she's trans, but she's still, you know. I think that's what people don't get is that, like, when you transition, you don't become, like, an entirely new person with, like, different molecules in your body and, like, different thoughts. It's, like, a lot of what you thought before will carry over, and obviously things will change, but you're still that person. So she was a Republican before. Doesn't make sense why she wouldn't be after.
Yeah, so you blew up on YouTube, I guess, around like 2016-ish, maybe, and you kind of came up with a lot of like conservative new media personalities. Like, there was kind of like you and Milo and Jordan Peterson and Dave Rubin. And it's like you all, it was like, it's like a wave of all of you, I felt like. And was it weird for you getting kind of so infamous so fast, or did you love it, or was it just like overwhelming?
I think it's been a healthy progression. I don't ever get the feeling like I was thrown into something I like wasn't ready for, because although it did happen fast for me, it wasn't like some overnight thing. Like, it wasn't like overnight now all of a sudden I'm very, very public. Now I feel very public. Like, there are people way more public than me. I'm not making it sound bigger than it is, but it is at a point where I'm like, sometimes I get anxiety in certain places because I'm like, people here might know, you know what I mean? It's odd, but I live a very private life. I have only a couple friends and my fiance and my dog, and I definitely keep my community of people very, very small. But as far as like all those people, like those other influencers that sort of blew up at the same time, I do feel like I was lumped in with them to an extent, but I was always different, which I think is why, like, you know, a lot of them are gone. Like, let's just be very honest, like Milo's gone.
Oh, I have a lot of questions about that whole and where they all went and stuff. Don't worry, I'm going to, because I'm really fascinated by that as well. So one of your like more controversial stances, I guess, is that you're against children medically transitioning, as in, you know, like hormones and surgery. And it is weird to me that it's such a taboo topic, because I feel like even if you're on the pro side of that, and it's still something that should be discussed, but it's kind of like you can't even talk about it sometimes without being shut down. Can you explain a bit from your perspective as a trans woman, you know, why it's something that you don't support?
Yeah, you know, and it's interesting because for that being, like you said, one of my more controversial takes, I'm also not that hard line on it. Like, there are people who are a lot more sort of black and white on the issue than I am. I think that there are absolutely cases of people who transitioned very young and were all the better for it. You know what I mean? Like, think of like the pop star Kim Petras. Like, she transitioned very young. I don't know the exact age, but it was extremely young. And obviously it was the right decision for her. Obviously it gave her the life that she has now. But there are also cases in which it's a bad decision. And I don't think you can ignore an entire side of the experience. The same way, you know, earlier I was saying, like, I can see the side of my family that accepts me and the side that doesn't. I can't lie to myself and say that the side that disowned me doesn't exist or that the side that loves me doesn't exist. It's like both exist, right? So I've interviewed detransitioners on my channel, people who transitioned in their very early teens and, you know, in some aspects, like, messed up their life because of it. Because when you take hormones and you make these decisions at young ages, it does cause permanent changes.
I totally agree with you on that. Whereas I think that there are cases where they're definitely all the better for transitioning at a young age. And then I think there are instances where it was the wrong decision. One reason that I've had trouble getting on board with it is that I actually had a lot of gender dysphoria growing up, I remember, from like a very young age. And then It actually continued in various forms, I would say, until I was like around 18. And then it was kind of like, then I got comfortable. It's like, oh, I'm just a gay man. And like, I love being a guy now. You know, I wouldn't change it for all the money in the world. There was definitely like a lot of gender dysphoria growing up. And I know that Ruby Rose, the actress, she's actually said the same. She said that she felt like she was a boy for a long time, and she had kind of thought about transitioning when she was growing up. And then once she got comfortable in her own skin, it's like, well, she's just, you know, she's a tomboy. She's sort of a slightly masculine lesbian. So, yeah, having gone through that experience, that is, for me, one reason why it's hard for me to get on board with, like, children transitioning. But then, like I said, I do think that there are those cases where it's definitely a right thing. So it's quite hard to take a stance on. And I definitely support people experimenting like non-medically, which I guess you would agree with. Like, you know, like if a boy wants to wear a dress, let him wear a dress. If a girl wants to, you know, play with trucks or whatever, like I think that they should get the stigma off that. Do you agree?
Absolutely. There's nothing inherently harmful about like playing dress up or experimenting with colors and play and imagination. I think that's great. If anything, I think suppressing that has negative effects. Like, so for example, when I was very young, I too, as a little boy, would play dress up. Very common story amongst people who end up being trans. And I would, you know, sneak little like makeup things from my mom's bathroom and take it to my bedroom. And, you know, my parents would find them, get very, very angry at me and punish me for it, whether it was no Xbox or no whatever or whatever. And it like broke my heart as a child. It was very damaging because in my mind, there was nothing that I was doing wrong. I was just being myself. And so it was very hurtful, and it caused a lot of rifts in my relationship with my parents, knowing that they were trying to suppress who I was. Because even back then, I inherently knew, like, I've always been very headstrong. I'm like, I'm going to do what I want to do, and I am who I am, and nothing's going to change that. But also, again, because this is such a messy topic and it is so full of nuance, even though lots of people pretend like it isn't full of nuance, you know, there are also parents who, I've made videos about this before. A recent one I did, there was a documentary on HBO about kids who transition. And sometimes the parents of these kids, man, like they make their kid being trans like their identity. And there was this one child in the film, it's called Transhood on HBO. And this child had a mom who was really pushing it, really pushing him being a girl for years, simply because when he was younger, he liked to play dress up. And she took that as, oh, you're a woman. Eventually, the kid came out and said, no, actually, I'm not a girl, and don't ever call me a girl again. And the mom was almost defensive about it, like didn't believe it. And it's like, okay, it's about letting your child naturally be who they're going to be when they grow up, not suppressing it and not pushing it.
Yeah, that's totally where I stand on it. I mean, I just feel like stay out of it. And then if the kid goes, I want to wear a dress or I want to play with a Barbie doll or whatever, go, sure, you know, whatever, go for it. And don't treat it like it's such a big deal and they'll figure it out naturally. So I also want to ask you where you are on the whole non-binary thing, because I know you've been quite critical on the non-binary stuff before. And to be honest, I used to be like that too. Like when the non-binary and everything came out, I'm like, oh God, here we go. Like, you know, what is this with these a million genders and stuff? But I've actually, I think, done like a big 180 on the non-binary stuff. I don't really have a problem with it anymore at all. And I actually think it's really good to have this extra label for people who don't feel like they fit into the male and female, that they can just go, I'm non-binary, and do their thing. And I also think, to the point about the transitioning, about how some people, you know, may transition, it's not what's good for them. It's good for them to have that non-binary label so they can be under that and then not feel pressure too much to transition or to conform. And it's just, they can be themselves. So I'm wondering if, you know, where you are on the non-binary label now.
Yeah, my position on non-binary is I think it's completely valid to feel varying levels of like masculinity and femininity. I think it's very valid to feel like you're not quite comfortable going by, you know, male or female, because there was a period in my life as a teenager where people, I never called myself non-binary because the term didn't even really exist back then. But people who looked at who see my pictures from then would like probably call me non-binary now. Like that's kind of what like non-binary people look like now. So, you know, I think that it's valid to be like that. I just take issue with non-binary people insisting that it is the same thing as being transgender, because having been through my transition, I think that my experience could not be more wildly different than a non-binary person. I mean, I've met non-binary people in my life, and like, they can't begin to like relate to transition. And it's not that I'm special or that like, woe is me, I've been through so much. It's just that like, no, we're different. In the same way that like, I always find it interesting how in the LGBT community, you know, you have labels like pansexual and bisexual, and for all intents and purposes, like in terms of like how they really like manifest in real life, like they have some similarities. Like they're not completely the same, but they have some similarities. But yet, you know, you're not supposed to say that they're the same thing. I think non-binary is even farther different than like being a transsexual or being a trans woman, but yet they're called the same thing. So that I can never really come to grips with. But I will say I don't have any hatred. I don't have any like ill will towards individuals who, you know, identify that way. It's just about saying like, cool, but like I'm a little different, and that's okay.
Yeah, I can see your perspective from being a transgender woman of not wanting to be lumped in with the non-binary. Like, I remember like before the transgender stuff started getting big, there was like a period where everyone was saying like that they're, you know, bisexual or whatever, you know, and it's like that annoyed me as a gay man, because I'm like, you know what, like I got bullied and went through a lot coming out, and now just because you were, you know, got drunk and kissed someone of the same sex at a party once and there's like a Pink song about it, you're pretending that you're bisexual and you're clearly straight. So that annoyed me. So I can totally understand how you would feel like it's people are trying to kind of encroach on your territory, because it is a whole different experience.
Yeah. I think it's just a matter of like one of the biggest struggles just historically with being a transgender woman or a transgender man is getting to a place where society really like understands us, maybe not understands in the sense of like knows what it is to be us, but has a baseline concept of like, this is what a trans woman is, this is what a trans man is. And I think for a lot of trans people, they look at the non-binary movement and they see that as something that has caused like confusion and like, just they've muddied the waters in the eyes of like general society. And that is how I feel to an extent as well. And that sucks, but I think the easy solution would just be having the two different categories. And it doesn't mean one is better than the other. It doesn't mean one is more special or one should be more accepted either. I think that's where people get tripped up on my position, is like, you think people should respect trans people, but not non-binary people. I'm like, no, I think everyone deserves respect. I just think that there's categories for a reason.
Yeah, I agree with that. So when did you move to Los Angeles? Because I know that you moved to LA like once your YouTube career started, like, you know, taking off.
Yeah, I moved to LA in 2017. And I'm actually not, I don't have the traditional like, oh, my YouTube's growing, I'm moving to LA story. People think that because like at the time it was growing, I did move to LA, but it's actually because I met my now fiance, then boyfriend, and he lived in LA. So it kind of just made more sense. It didn't help that there are more opportunities when you're a YouTuber in LA, or at least there was before COVID.
Yeah. I want to ask you a bit about like the life of an influencer in Hollywood, because you've talked about it a bit on your channel. You've kind of like alluded to it and stuff. And there was a period that we would see you, you know, I've been a fan of yours since like the beginning, and we would see you out like with, you know, Eden and going to the clubs and everything. And then later on, you've kind of been like, look, I'm just not into that whole, you know, Pete, you said that there would be like influencers that would like flash their blue ticks and stuff to get into clubs and everything. Is that what it's like? Is it just?
Yeah. I mean, it feels like 10 million years ago. I mean, I feel like my concept of time is so messed up after like the pandemic, but yeah, that's what it was like. You know, LA is a very shallow place, and it's a place where I think like any other place, you, if you move there, you try to assimilate to an extent. Like, you know, if I were to move to Alabama, I would maybe start learning how to, like, I don't know, like, take care of cows or something. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't know what they do in Alabama, but I would probably try to assimilate to an extent. So when I moved to LA, I definitely was trying to be more so a part of that world. But what you learn very quickly is that it's quite fruitless and that it doesn't actually bring you happiness. And it might look fun, but it's full of really crazy, really awful people. And I've learned over time, it's probably given me some trust issues, to be honest. But also, I've learned that it's so important to just keep your circle so tight, because I have met a lot of people like that, that are like, that think that because they have a blue check next to their name that they can do whatever. I mean, you have a blue check next to your name. Have you ever done that?
No, but I just have the shitty journalist blue check that you can get if you've got like 5 followers. So it's not the same.
It counts. It all counts.
Is it really super competitive? I imagine that, especially Instagram and YouTube, is it like everyone is obsessing over their followers and their subs? And also that must be like pretty stressful. I can't imagine having like that big of a following and then having to, you know, worry about it all the time, because it's like your livelihood sort of depends on it in some ways.
I'll be honest, I've never been like that. I think it's because I think a lot of people, now that being, you know, online and making content online has become such a popular thing and such a way of life for so many people and so aspirational for so many people, there are people who get into it intentionally, like, no, my goal is to become an Instagrammer or a TikToker or a YouTuber. And for me, it was completely by accident. And I think that's kind of why I've managed to stay like sane, because anything and everything that's happened since me uploading that first video on YouTube has been completely by surprise, has not been by expectation or even by goal. I uploaded on YouTube a really crappy first video. It was like done on the crappiest like 240p webcam with a single light source, a $10 lamp from Target. And I was really just ranting about, at the time, the hot topic on YouTube was feminism. And I made it really with the intention of only a few people in my friend circle seeing it, because we were all like in college and talking about it at the time. I woke up to like 10,000 views on it. And the next day I woke up to like 50,000 views on it. I was like, what is happening? And so my life has adjusted since then where I'm like, okay, I can kind of run with this. But it's never been this thing that I'm like, I got to get to it. I got to get to this number and I got to get to this level of fame and anything like that. I'm just living my life and I live it online and it is what it is. But there are people that are very consumed by it and that's very unhealthy.
I know. Well, I was going to ask, do you consider yourself like part of the YouTube scene? Just because I know there was a period where, you know, you were hanging out with Shane Dawson and you've been on the Trisha Paytas podcast and it was sort of like you were like dipping your toe in that world a bit, but then You did a few like drama videos, like you did the, you know, you did some takes on like Shane and Jeffrey and everything.
It's hard for me to say no, because I feel like people would easily be like, really, you upload on YouTube and you're known for being a YouTuber, but you don't consider yourself like a YouTuber. I don't know. I literally just consider myself me. And as far as like that whole world with the Shanes, the Jeffreys, the Trishas, you know, I don't have any issues with Trisha. I really don't have any issues with Shane. I do with Jeffrey because I think he's a really, really bad person. But I guess that whole world just is very toxic and I haven't wanted to be a part of it. And so over the summer, I was in some mess with like Shane and Jeffrey, but that was sort of my, as I was uploading those videos, I was telling myself, this is me stepping away from this group of people. Like, I'm uploading these videos not to be lumped in or included with these people, but to say I am officially distancing myself from all of that, because in terms of like that darkness we were talking about, like the underworld of like the influencer world, like that's like the pit of it. That's like the core of it.
It's I know.
Like, you know, I wasn't like just, you know, involved with like a few people who like they do YouTube. I was like, no, Shane Dawson and Jeffree Star. Like that is such a, it's just a never ending whirlwind of like chaos and drama and darkness, and it's just like, keep me away from it, you know.
I've been watching because I actually am not that into YouTube. Well, I watch a lot of political YouTubers, like I watch like Carl Kalinske and stuff, and I watch you, and I've been watching some more of the like typical influencers lately, because I'm watching Trisha on the Frenemies podcast. Mm-hmm. And it's like every single week, it's like, no shade to Trisha, but it's like every week it's like, oh my god, I'm in a new drama with someone, there's a new, like the world is ending because I'm beefing with this person and they said this on Instagram and this person said that, and it's just, I'm just like, oh my god, how do you do this? Yeah. Like, it's so exhausting. So it's
stressful. And it's the whole concept of like airing out personal business, you know what I mean? Because I think of like the friends I have in my life, like my real friends, not people I've met through YouTube and whatever, the Shanes and the whatever. I'm thinking of like my best friend JC. If he and I ever got into a fight, I would never in a million years, unless he like killed my puppy or something intentionally, or like, I don't know, like punched my mom in the face, like I would never go online and want to like make a thing of it. Because I think
the truth about JC.
Yeah, exactly. I would never, but that's because that's like a real friend. And, you know, everyone handles things in different ways, but I do look at some of the people who, you know, have sort of monetized like friendships ending and drama between friendships. And he said, she said this. It's like, I don't know. And some people may say I did that to an extent with the Shane and Jeffrey thing, but to me, I did it to Jeffrey because he told me about crimes, like actual illegal stuff, and told me some really crazy shit on FaceTime that I didn't feel comfortable holding on to. And then with the Shane, you know, I don't think in my video I really went at him. I think I just said, like, what you're seeing as far as his jokes about pedophilia, I think it stems from, like, his childhood trauma. But peace, I'm out. I want nothing to do with it.
Yeah, and even when I watch that stuff, I'm like, how much of this is even real? Are these just like fake beefs for clicks and stuff? It's just
a lot of it is.
Yeah, it's like if you wouldn't, when you're watching The Housewives and you're like, well, they're just arguing because they need a storyline. You know, I feel like the same when I look at some of the YouTube stuff. Is it with Jeffrey? So is it really like Jeffrey's like this, like the queen bee, like the prom queen? Everyone's like scared. Everyone wants to be the prom queen's friend, but they're also scared.
Ooh, I don't know. In terms of Jeffrey, you know, I'm 27, so I'm old enough to remember MySpace. And so I remember, you know, his presence there. And I was, you know, a fan when I was 12, 13. And then he came to YouTube and then that was cool. But I think like, it's kind of one of those moments where you don't want to meet your idol, whatever that quote is of like never meeting, you know, your idol. Not that he was ever my idol, but he was someone that I thought was like cool. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then it just turned sour. And it is kind of like that where he's kind of like the villain of YouTube. And some of it's over-dramatized. Some of it's real. You know what I mean? And he has done some really, really bad things to people. But sometimes I see people say certain things and I'm like, okay, he's not like Lord Voldemort for real. He kind of looks like it, but chill.
I know. It's a lot of the videos as well when they cancel people. Like, I actually said this to Shallon. I'm like, you know, I watched a video of you being cancelled and, like, some of it I agreed with, but then it just gets so overblown with it where it's just, like, too much. It's like, okay, this person's not, like, Hitler. Like, calm down.
Yeah.
It's too far.
But, you know, it's YouTube. It's a crazy cycle, and that's why I always say, like, it's so important to have like a real life because like the internet is not real life. So like I have a very full, happy, like real life. So like no matter what's happening online, it's like I'm good because like I'm happy with my fiance and the few friends I have and like my life here, even though I kind of am over LA. I made a whole video about how I was going to leave LA and then my fiance got a new job and he had to stay here.
Oh, so that's why you're staying. Yeah, because when we were booking the interview, I'm like, girl, are you in Dallas or LA? Because I wasn't sure.
I kind of wish Texas, I was in Dallas, yeah. But, you know, I had full-on plans on leaving and then life happens and my fiance got a really nice job here. And when you're in a relationship, you compromise, even though that's hard for me. So, yeah.
You don't compromise with any of the, like, decor in your house. It's very feminine. I always notice that. I'm like, does Joey like the pink lampshades?
I think he's learned to just accept it. The bed is pink. All the lights are pink. Even the dog's pink. We dye our pink.
Yeah.
Everything.
So before you kind of got in, like, well, you were, you know, had a friendship with like Shane and stuff. You were, like I said earlier in the interview, you were big in that YouTube conservative world that you got lumped into with like, you know, the Ben Shapiro's and Steven Crowder and used to do all of their shows. And then you did kind of just stop at one point because I remember you would always do the interviews on the Crowder and everything. You just stopped. And I'm kind of interested about that because you could have done the Candace Owens thing. Like you could have leaned into that even more and probably made like a lot of money doing that if you had like really gone into it. So yeah, can you explain that a bit? I've always been curious.
Yeah. Oh wow, I've never really talked about this. This is a good question. I did come up with all those people, the Dave Rubens, the Milos, the all those, the Steven Crowders. And I did at a certain point, I'd say it was probably like mid 2018. I did stop, maybe even 2019. I did stop going on all that stuff. And I think it's because I realized, like I said earlier, that politics is not, it's not my entire being. And I feel like I can dip my toes into that. You know, like even like all of last year, I was doing speaking engagements with Walk Away, which is a right wing group. And that was really great. I was going all around the country doing talks and so I dip my toes in still, but, and I think that if I did do the full, like, thing. I could have probably done a lot with it. But you realize, like, what do you sacrifice to be that person? Like, I think at a certain point, I kind of was like, I'm not going to sacrifice my soul for this. And I think that if you go full political at the expense of everything else that you are, like, you kind of are sacrificing your soul. And it's such a brutal, like, gross, disingenuous world, if I'm being honest. It's like the influencer world times 20. Like, that's why I started getting more in that world, because I'm like, these people are fake, but at least they're kind of upfront about being fake. These other people, like, just swear they're these people. And I would meet these, and I won't name names or whatever, but I would meet these political influencers and conservative figureheads who were just like, it's not about being a different person off camera. It's like, oh no, your beliefs are 180 different on and off camera. And mine never were. People like to say that they are. People like to say that I've, like, you know, but if, trust me, if I wanted to, like, fake some beliefs for money, I could have been done that, and I could have been went hard on that. But I've never compromised what I think for money, because I just think that's so gross and I couldn't go to bed at night. So it was more so about not wanting to be involved with, like, that group of people. I don't know some of them super personally. I just know that a lot of times I'd be very turned off by behind the scenes interactions with some of them.
Well, you did do a kind of a infamous video now, I think, where you did allude to a lot of this stuff. I think you said something about, there was one that was like, oh yeah, I don't really hate trans people, we just have to do this on air, and or something like that. Well, I've just got to do this for my audience. But I'm cool with you and everything. And you said someone,
that was someone, I can say who that was. I don't care now.
Girl, spill the tea, because I've...
Yeah, it was Steven Crowder.
Oh!
Yeah, and I think that he, I don't think he's a bad person. I think he's an entertainer. I don't think that he has sold his soul like I implied that people tend to do in that world. I think that he's been very nice to me on certain occasions, but what I could never reconcile, because I did a show like 4, 5, 6 times, what I could never reconcile is, like, I would go on the show time and time again, and it would be like this, like, on air, it would be this very, like, accepting place, and, like, I would make sense to him, and I'd be like, no, we're not all crazy. He'd be like, oh yeah, you're not all crazy. And then the second I was off, it was like, so trannies are all crazy. And I'm like, what the fuck? Why am I coming on? So it was like, why am I here? Like, what do I just come on for you to be like a completely different person? And then what, you know what I mean? I don't think he's a bad person. I just think he has a shtick. I couldn't see where I'd fit into the shtick on his show.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I work in media, mainstream media. A lot of people don't really understand that news, like, it's the mainstream news media, it's political YouTube and stuff, like, it's an act. It's like, you couldn't make it in mainstream showbiz, so you found a career in, like, politics. Like, it's not real. Like, you look at even just the cable news anchors and stuff, it's like, this person, you know, wanted to be, like, a model or an actress or whatever, and it didn't work out, and now they're a news anchor. Like, they want to be in front of the camera. They don't believe what they're saying. It's bullshit.
A lot of them, you're really not lying, because I have met a lot of them who had, like, you know, fledgling acting careers 10 years prior, and then they're like, let me just do politics. And that tends to work out better for them. And so everyone's hustle is everyone's hustle. But I think the long and short of it, of why I never went super hard with the politics and was like the conservative tranny on Fox News, like maybe could have been the future for me, was like, I didn't want to be fake like that. Just being honest, like, you know, I'm not trying to be like, oh, I'm so real, whatever. But like, I was a little too fucking real for that shit. I'm just being honest.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's like, Michael Knowles, actor, Dave Rubin, comedian, Steven Crowder, comedian. How many of them? Yeah. Like, Ben Shapiro is one where I actually feel like he is who he is. You know, that's why I...
Yes.
That's why I actually like... Not that I agree with his views and stuff, but I find him more authentic than the rest of them. So, it's why I've never, like, hated Ben Shapiro, because at least I feel like he believes what he's saying and believes in the cause, whereas the others are like, yeah, just working a shtick.
You're a really good judge of character, because I really like Ben as well. And I've met Ben and I had him on my channel, and I think he is very genuine as well. I've never had an issue with Ben. I've always just been turned off by like inauthenticity, and it's just so common in that world that I wanted to kind of get out of it.
Yeah, I mean, I do like when Ben becomes like a meme, when he says something stupid and then everyone roasts him on Twitter. That's pretty fun.
He knows too. He puts it out there because it's like at the end of the day, like, he likes it.
I know. I mean, anyone that's in front of a camera in any way, like they like being in front of a camera, like they like attention. I mean, or they wouldn't be doing it.
Yeah.
So what, look, while we're on this subject, I've always wanted to know this, girl. It's been years. I always wanted to ask this question. I want to know about your fallout with Dave Rubin, and I want to ask you about the Candace Owens thing too. So I'm just going to give some background for my listeners that don't know, if you don't follow the YouTube political people. So Dave Rubin is a former comedian. He hosts a popular political talk show on YouTube. He started because he used to work with the Young Turks, who were a progressive sort of indie left-wing news outlet. And then he left them and he started his own thing. And his whole shtick was, you know, I'm on the left, but I'm not like a crazy SJW, okay? I'm not into like the pronouns and stuff, but I'm left wing. And that was his whole thing, which turned out to be bullshit, because now he works with like Glenn Beck and Fox News, and he's just, you know, he goes where the money is, basically. But he did bamboozle a lot of people in the beginning, including me, a former fan. And look, Candace Owens, I think everyone knows who Candace Owens is at this point. She's actually a pretty big deal. She's a black female conservative. She got popular on YouTube and social media. Now she like works with Trump. You know, her career is big. Her whole thing is, you know, I'm a black woman, but I'm conservative, and you know, isn't that unique?
That's always been, I just want to say, really, I'm always so shocked people think that's unique, because I feel like the black community is very conservative socially. Like, that's what I've always known of the community. So I'm always.
I know. Well, I hate when people try to lump any minority into any kind of particular viewpoint. Like, even during the recent, the Democratic primary, and Joe Biden said something like, you know, you're not black if you don't vote for me. It's like, really, dude? Like, I think people can think for themselves and vote for whoever the hell they want to vote for. But look, so you, back in the day, you had some kind of beef with Candace. Dave, who you were friends with at the time, had you on his show. And I guess the premise was like, I'm going to mediate and you two are going to, you know, work out your differences together, because he was friends with both of you, but he was friends with you first. And basically, it was just a fucking shit show. It was like a political Real Housewives. And Candace just basically misgendered you for like 2 hours. It was just like, you're a man, you're a man, you're a man. I'm not sitting across from a woman. Like, horrible. She was awful. And I mean, I feel like you were never friends with Dave after that. So, I mean, did that end your friendship with him?
Yeah, it did. Yeah, just to be very honest.
Long intro.
Yeah. That was definitely the demise of Dave Rubin and I's friendship. You know, I'm not going to sit here and say we were like best friends and he was like having sleepovers, like, scoot over, girl, let's cuddle. Like, no. But, you know, I had been to his house for dinner a few times. At that point, I was on his show 3 times. I was at his Christmas party where there was only like 5 or 6 other people. So I was kind of close. You know, I just felt blindsided, because the lead up to that debate with Candace and I, there was basically controversy over her. I believe it was, I think it was doxing people.
Yeah,
which I've always been very against, and I've been doxed everywhere I've lived. So I took personal offense to seeing someone brazenly and openly doxing people. And that was my issue. However, I had made some like offhand comment about her in a sea of people who were like really going for her, and people who with even bigger platforms than me. But for some reason, she chose me to invite on the Dave Rubin show and debate, which I was totally down for, because I'm always down for debates. But considering the platform was with my friend Dave, you know, we definitely talked beforehand. Like, you know, we're texting like, oh my God, is this really gonna happen? Yes. And she was on Twitter saying like, that basically she was going to call me a man on it, which, spoiler, she did. I'm like, why are you going to, whatever. So I was telling Dave, I was like, you know, like, I can handle a lot, but like, that just seems kind of like extra specially foul. And like, I'd like to have like a productive conversation, because I'm not going to go in there and attack her identity or anything personally with her. It's going to be based on like the issues we're talking about. So, you know, maybe you could like mediate a little bit. And like, if that happens, maybe we just, you can let it happen. I'm not going to say to censor her, but like, maybe shut it down when it does. and he was like, don't even worry. I'm going to talk with her, and there's no way she's going to do that, and blah, blah, blah. And basically we spoke again, and he was like, I talked to her and there's no way. And then I show up, and basically after him promising it was going to be civil and he wouldn't stand for anything, he basically let it happen in such an extreme way that I couldn't help but feel disrespected by both of them. if that makes sense.
It was relentless. It was relentless. Yeah. It didn't stop.
One time, okay. Two times, okay. 35 times, and your friend sitting there isn't stepping in, listen, stop, okay? Like, my friend JC, my best friend JC is a little person. If someone sat across next to me and called him a midget or something, I would, even if I was trying to be professional, like, I would not let that happen. It just wouldn't happen. And that's just how I am with my friendships. So there was that was the first strike, but that didn't actually end the friendship. What ended the friendship was me going to your Christmas party. After that, him saying he wants nothing to do with Candace, he's not going to work with her, she's the devil, and the very next day hanging out with her and taking a picture because she had signed some like deal with, I think it was like Fox News, or I don't even remember what it was, but there was something he clearly wanted to be in orbit for. And I was like, he let me get like attacked like that despite being my friend. And he told me last night he doesn't want to be with this person. And the next day he's posting up pictures like, this is my best friend. Like, girl, bye.
I was a Dave Rubin fan in the early days. I fell for the shtick. And it was his friendship with Candace where I was like, hang on, this guy's a crook, because I saw Candace when she was red pill black on YouTube. Like, I saw the grift. Like, I saw the first videos of Candace. And when I saw Candace's videos, I'm like, oh, she's just watched a bunch of Dave Rubin and Blair White videos and she's repackaged the talking points as a black woman. So I saw the grift straight away. Like, and I always spot it because, like, I work with fucking reality stars and tabloids and stuff. Like, I know when someone's, like, doing a bit. So I knew she was a crook. And then after that episode, and when she attacked you, like, she came out the gate like, you're a man, which had nothing to do with anything. It was just so she could, like, show off to her, you know, QAnon followers or whatever to, like, you know, big up herself with them. And then when I kept seeing Dave, like, I saw him posting pictures on Twitter and stuff, because he used to follow me and we used to DM sometimes. And I would see him, and then he blocked me, I think, because I don't know, maybe I liked a negative tweet about him. He blocks anyone that says anything remotely negative about him. He's probably got you blocked, right?
I have him blocked. I just got tired of seeing it. It wasn't even like we had some kind of confrontation. I just got tired of seeing it. I was like, I just don't even want to see you. Candace has me blocked, though. She's had me blocked ever since then, and I've heard rumors that if you comment my name on her Instagram at all, she will block you.
Oh, okay. Yeah, she look, yeah, it's just fake. And when I was seeing Dave hanging out with Candace, someone with, like, that I just knew had zero credibility, I'm like, okay, dude, you're not real. So let's get into some of your controversy instead of everyone else's. You got into hot water recently. So you did a video on a trans bodybuilder. And you basically said that she was competing against biological women in sports, which she wasn't. And you put out an apology for that. Well, you put out two apologies for that. You put one on Twitter and you put one on YouTube. And I thought your apology was really good. I thought you really took ownership of, like, what went wrong there and everything. And, you know, I saw that brewing on social media, like, before you would apologize. And I was like, oh, girl, please don't make me have to, like, throw Blair out with, like, Dave Rubin and everyone. Like, I'm a big, you know, longtime Blair fan. And then when you apologized, I was really glad because I thought the apology was really sincere and it was really thorough. Like, you really kind of went down where you had fucked up and you seemed really remorseful and everything. Having had that experience and then having had that backlash from that, have you, like, kind of made any changes in, like, how you do content, like, moving forward to make sure that, you know, something like that doesn't happen again?
Yeah, I mean, it's just about, like, just making sure you're super accurate. It's really that simple, you know? I mean, it's just about, like, being, like, extra thorough. I think that one of the things I think I've mentioned a few times during this podcast is, like, my approach to social media has always just been super, like, I'm just being me on social media. But what happens is, you know, because I'm being me, but I also have a following, I'm not just like Stacy from your hometown who's posting and like six people are seeing and three of them are her cousins. It's like, you know, there's a lot of people watching. So there's a lot more eyes. And if you mess up, it's like, you mess up as Stacy on Facebook and like only your mom cares. You mess up as like Blair on YouTube and like a lot of people care. You know what I mean? So, it's just about being more aware of, like, that it's, like, actually a big platform. And sometimes even though you feel like you're just talking to, like, yourself and your camera, and my life is so insular, like I said, I'm really not. Like, I'm really broadcasting to a lot of people. So what you say definitely matters.
Did you feel like the mistake kind of happened? Because I can imagine being a YouTube creator, like, it's probably a bit like on a hamster wheel sometime. Like, I've got to get new content out. And then it can just, I guess it can lead to, like, sloppiness at some point. Because it's like, well, look, I've got to have a new video out at this day, you know, every week. And I guess mistakes can probably happen.
Yeah, I think that was, like, a part of it, a small part of it. It was, I guess I wish there was something more dramatic to say about it, but it was literally like I made a video and I talked about a few different trans athletes, and like the part that I got wrong, not to minimize it because it was wrong, like I said, it made up about 15 seconds of the video. It wasn't like the biggest part of the video, and like I got it wrong. But, you know, going forward, it's like I'm definitely even more careful. I've never been like sloppy to the point. If I was sloppy to the point where I was always getting things wrong, this wouldn't be the first time this happened. This would be something going way back. So I don't expect anything like that to happen, but I'm also not going to set myself up and be like, I'm always going to be right from now on, you know?
Yeah. And another criticism that you get is that I guess people would say that you would like advocate for sort of like one specific type of trans person, like someone that is kind of like conventionally attractive and fits gender norms. And I did kind of, I feel like I noticed this in one of your videos once where you did a video about transgender dating, and you sort of said something like, I mean, I may have taken it the wrong way, but you had said like, you know, I haven't had, you know, trouble dating before, and it's not that hard dating kind of like being trans, but it's also like, I mean, you're really hot. Everyone, you know, wants to bang Blair White, like even before your like surgeries and the facial feminization, everything, when you like back in the day, like my straight friends were like Blair White fans. They were like, I would do Blair White, you know.
Oh, wow.
You're famous, you know, people want to bang you, you're famous, you're obviously going to be more attractive than the average person who doesn't have you know, may not just not be as attractive naturally, or they don't have access, you know, the money to have the transition and the glams and everything. So, I mean, how do you kind of respond to that criticism that you focus maybe on promoting like one type of transgender person?
Well, I've always found that interesting that people say that about me, because I think just the fact that I'm open about having a dick kind of negates the idea that I'm like so strict on what a trans person is, because there are trans people who are like, you're not really trans unless you have a vagina and you have this done. And I've never really ever been like that. Like, I'm very open about, like, you know, I've done a few things to my body, but like I am pre-op and I'm not 100% sure if I'm going to go through with that or not. And so I think if anything, I could be like a lot stricter on like what makes a trans person. I think what makes a trans person is just someone who transitions, and to whatever extent that is, like, that's the extent that that person transitions. I did a video recently on my second channel. It was kind of like a how-to on how to like pass, which I don't really love the concept because it's so subjective. But in that I said, like, there is this narrative that I'm like always talking about, like who passes and who doesn't and passability. And it's like, I've really never talked about it. Like maybe a couple times. And when it comes to dating, when I say like, oh, it's my experience that I haven't had any troubles dating, what I'm actually trying to convey, and I probably could have even said it better, is that like trans women in general, like I don't think have that much of an issue like dating. I think like there is such a huge sector of men who want to be with trans women. I don't really know what the case is for trans men, I'll be honest, but for trans women, like it's one of the most popular porn categories. People pretend it isn't, but it is. And guess what section it's in? It's in the straight section. This is just science, honey. Like, it is what it is. So I think that what I really meant by that is, like, trans women who transition, like, they don't really have trouble dating. Like, men do want us. You know what I mean?
I can see what you're trying to say. It's like, we're not, you know, the black sheep or the redheaded stepchild or something. Like, there's plenty of interest out here, honey. Like,
people act like it's some, like, black sheep shit, but at the end of the day, like, I know it's not even about looks, because I know a lot of busted ass trans women who are swimming in dudes. I'll just be very honest. Like, and those dudes may or may not pay them. It's regardless.
Okay, so look, on a lighter note now, which reality shows do you watch? So you watch Housewives of New Jersey, right?
I'm obsessed with the Housewives of New Jersey. I'm so excited they're coming back for another season. It looks really good as well.
Yeah, did you like the trailer?
I did like the trailer. It's interesting how all these shows are allowed to film during COVID.
Yeah, they have some weird strict rules. Like, I don't know if you watched the other ones, but like on The Real Housewives of Atlanta that's airing now, they've got like face shields and everything. And
yeah.
There was one where they broke the fourth wall on Orange County and a producer was like, you guys need to distance more. So, I mean, it's pretty strict. I don't know how I feel about Jersey coming back because I really like Danielle. Danielle's my favorite. And
I know. And she was done so dirty in the last one.
Oh my God. It was so wrong. What's your opinion on Teresa? Because it sounds like we have the same opinion that everyone kind of kisses Teresa's ass. Like she's the queen, even when she does wrong. And yeah. I kind of think it ruins the show a bit because I feel like you can't have an organic beef because it's like at the end of the day, we need to be back on Teresa's good side.
Yeah. I do think she's treated like the queen, even though I do think there have been some more iconic characters like Danielle. I think if anything, in my mind, the queen of Jersey is Danielle. I know that's like maybe people don't think that, but like for me, it's Danielle. And I think she was done so dirty by, like, they should have just put her on as a main cast member. They were playing with her, stringing her along, making her a friend of, and I didn't like that at all. I also didn't like how she was bullied in that it was like a, what was it, like a clothing store or like a store or whatever. Yeah. Had the drink thrown on her, and then, like, she yanked the bitch's hair like anyone would have, like I would have. And I don't like how she was kicked off because of that.
I 100% agree with that. I feel like one reason I always defend Danielle is it's like as toxic and crazy as she is, which she is, and she does start with people. It's like most of the time they start with her because they know they can get a reaction out of her. Like they will poke her and then they don't like what they get back.
Yeah. And I relate to Danielle because I feel like people are so dedicated to their perception of her as the villain that like they can never let it go. It's the same with me. Like even if I'm doing nice things, it's like I'm still going to be the villain. So it is what it is.
Do you watch any of the other Bravo shows or just Jersey?
I will dip into Beverly Hills, but it gets so boring sometimes. I will dip into Atlanta, but really what I'm obsessed with is Little Women Atlanta. And now I'm actually just started Little Women Dallas, which it doesn't quite hit the same as Atlanta, but I am obsessed with those little bitches.
Is Dallas the one with left cheek and right cheek?
Yes. And they were on Atlanta as well. And then they moved over to Dallas.
Oh, okay. People love the Little Women franchise. You've got to get into Below Deck because I recently became a Below Deck stan. I thought it would be boring, so I haven't watched it. I never watched it.
It sounds boring.
But I know it does sound boring. It's not. It's so good. Like you'll be addicted. It's actually amazing. Watch Below Deck and watch. I keep plugging this to everyone. Watch Temptation Island when it starts because that show is the best.
Okay.
Yeah, so Temptation Island, I'll like tweet you to remind you. So they get couples that are in a relationship, like say you and Joey, let's use that as a hypothetical. And then it's like you and Joey go to an island, you get separated, and there's a bunch of like single guys that you party with, and there's a bunch of single girls that he parties with. And then it's like, will you get tempted or not? And then at the end of the night, the partner has to watch back what their significant other's been doing. So like,
that's so good. I'm almost gonna watch that tonight with him.
It's amazing. You actually binge. Yeah, you can binge it before. I'll send you a link. I know where to watch it.
You know, I was almost. That sounds amazing. I've heard the title, but I didn't know it was like that. That sounds good.
Yeah.
You know, I was almost a little reality star myself.
Well, you applied I know this Real World.
Yeah, they hit me up and wanted me to audition, which was, it was never in my wheelhouse. Like I'm a YouTuber. Like I don't need reality television, whatever. And they put me through like the longest casting process of life, like months and months and months, kept pushing me through. I got to the very final end and then they didn't call me back. And it's like, they manipulated me into thinking I wanted it. And then when I didn't get it, I was super sad. And I was like, wait, I never even wanted this. And I'm glad I didn't do it. Cause the season was like only aired on like Facebook Watch, which like who even watches that?
That's cringe. That actually would like be lowering.
Yeah.
You. It's like, really? I've gone.
I would have made it good though.
Yeah. Well, I had the same thing as you. I almost got a Married at First Sight Australia, and I went through like six months. Like, I totally thought I was going to get on. They were literally like, what's your passport details, you know, for your honeymoon and everything. It was like a few weeks before filming. And then I was like, they didn't do a gay couple. And I was like, oh, aww, my God. And they make you think that you want it so bad because of just dangling it in front of you, you know?
I know. And it was so, and I'm glad I didn't do it because like, it was like 3 months of filming and I couldn't take my computer or my phone. So it was like, I would just like lose all my social media. Like if you can't post for 3 months, it's like, girl, like what?
It's not worth it to do the real world.
No.
Those things do work out because now I'm so glad that I didn't do Married at First Sight. Like it's really big in Australia and I'm like, it actually would have ruined my life. You know, originally I was like, you know, I'm going to go on a reality show, then I'll do a podcast. And then I'm like, fuck that. I'm just going to do a podcast now. And at least I can do it as like a journalist and stuff instead of being like the fucking loser from Married at First Sight. So I think it works out. Well, are you ever going to do OnlyFans? Because you could make a lot of money on OnlyFans.
Am I ever going to do OnlyFans? I'm not going to say never, never. If I do, it'll probably be something stupid and kitschy like feet because like... At this point, the amount of like men in my DMs just wanting to see feet, I'm like, if I don't profit off this, I'm kind of dumb. There's even like a foot wiki online. Have you seen this?
Wiki Feet. I've seen it.
Yeah. And they have like mad pictures of me. And I'm like, pictures where like my feet are seen in like a reflection of a mirror in the corner of a photo. And
you can see it. And
I'm like, they really find my feet no matter what. Cause I try not to post my feet because who posts their fucking feet? But
I know
they find them. So if I do OnlyFans, it'll be something funny like that.
Okay, so it's a maybe on the OnlyFans, and
sorry, that was a long Joey, answer.
You could do a couples one, Joey and Blair OnlyFans. Oh, you make a lot of money.
I would make a lot of money, but I don't know.
Have you seen Trisha's OnlyFans?
I haven't seen it, but she asked me to collab with her on it.
No, did you really?
Yeah, she asked me to fuck her for OnlyFans. And I was like, because she loves trans women. She's like a tranny chaser. She's admitted to it. She loves trans women.
Did you consider it?
I did not consider it. I was flattered, I suppose, but...
Did she offer you like a lump sum up front? Like, girl, if you...
No, that's the thing. Like she should have came with a monetary offer, honey. She did not. But she asked me like in private, and then she also like posted on Instagram like a story, and she's like, "Who wants Blair to fucking OnlyFans or something?" I was like, "The fuck?" So
I'm fucking dead.
Yeah.
Okay. So look, you are also working on a podcast, Blair White Project. Tell me about that because I'm just curious as a fan of you. Like, what are you doing on the pod? What's the subject matter? Are you having guests? Tell me like the whole thing.
Yeah. So I am launching a podcast very, very soon. We're talking like in the next like few days, called The Blair White Project. And I want it to basically be long form content. So an hour, because I think that's something that's missing from what I do. Cause I try to keep my videos very tailored to around the 10-minute mark. So I want long-form content where I can really just express myself even more and not limit myself. I want to talk about things that are not YouTube-friendly. And we're not saying porn. We're not saying, like, anything, like, crazy. But we're just talking YouTube is very strict in the sense of, like, a very good example is if you even mention the word pandemic or COVID or anything in a video on YouTube, you will be demonetized and oftentimes your reach will be limited just because YouTube doesn't trust what you're saying. You know what I mean? But it's crazy because we're living in this world where like COVID consumes everything. And it's like my fans want to know my thoughts on like how California is doing and restrictions and what I think and when we're going to be out of it and whatever. And it's like I can't even openly talk about it because YouTube will restrict me. So that's actually going to be in one of the first few episodes is like a whole like Corona thing. So yeah, just talking about things I can't really already talk about and just long form and also having guests as well.
Yeah. So kind of like a bit of an extension of your YouTube channel. And that is what's so good about podcasts is that you don't have to chase like a YouTube algorithm, which is, I mean, that must be a nightmare having to.
It is. And it limits who you are. It makes who you are smaller in a way. because there's so much I want to talk about. Like I'm loving that we can talk about the Housewives on here, but if I made a video, like a Housewives review on my channel, like no one would watch it, but I would love to have the freedom to do that. I'm also like, this is going to sound weird, but like, I'm super into like space and like, you know, I watch videos all about like the possibility of like extraterrestrial life. Like I'm not even kidding. Like I watch like astronomy videos and like, I would love to like talk about that and shit. So it's just about me being even more fully who I am in a long form way.
Is Joey like a co-host or is it just you?
It's just me. It's the Boy White Project. So it's just me. But I am going to have guests and he will be a guest because I think we'll probably do some episode about like love and relationships or whatever. And like, he can be a guest and yeah. And like, you'll be a guest and just,
yes,
yeah. So I'm excited.
That's a good note to end it on. Guys, subscribe to Blair's podcast. It probably will be out by the time this drops. I think this drops in a week. So everyone go subscribe to the Blair White Project. Thank you so much for coming on. Like I said, I'm like a day one fan, like OG fan. I've stuck with you even when I unsubscribed from the Rubens and the everyone else of the world. I stayed with Blair. So
that's a good sign. Thank you.
Thank you so much. That's it for this week, guys. Thanks so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed that interview and you stuck around for the whole thing, because I know this was a super long episode. You can follow Blair White's podcast on Patreon. It is behind a paywall, but it's pretty entertaining. If you're a fan of Blair's, I think you'll love her podcast because I already subscribed and I'm really enjoying it. You can follow me on social media at PopInkPod on Twitter and Instagram. You can also support the podcast on buymeacoffee.com/PopInkPod. All of the money there goes towards either feeding my caffeine addiction or paying for show-related costs. I will see you all next week. I have no idea what I'm doing on next week's show. I think I'll probably just cover some of the Bravo on reality TV news. Like, I think I might talk about Salt Lake City and Dallas and get you up to date with all that, because I haven't really got to talk about them for a while. Atlanta too, but who knows, I might end up booking a spicy guest at the last minute. So we'll see what happens. Thanks so much for your support, everyone. Bye.